It's recording.
All right.
Hey, guys. Nick.
Rob.
Joe.
Ba-da-da. I don't know. It just felt necessary to do that.
We are keeping up with the Kardashians.
We are keeping up with the Kardashians. Kardashians.
You love your Kardashians.
We're named after nothing. It's just an odd coincidence, really. You know, there was no attempt to name the same thing.
Never. No, because we're keeping up with episodic television that involve Kardashians.
And it just so happens Profit and Loss today has some Kardashians in it.
That's true.
Yeah. Whopping five Kardashians total.
Yeah.
Yeah. Five. Yeah.
All Kardashians all the time.
All Kardashian. Keeping it real.
Most importantly, it had Garrick.
It did have Garrick.
Lots of Garrick.
Yeah. So we got two episodes today. We got Profit and Loss and Blood Oath. Two, in my opinion, here's my hot take. Great episodes.
You gonna retort to that?
No, I agree. We discussed it briefly on the way in, yeah. And I thought both episodes were really good.
How does it make you feel that I completely lied to you last week that we didn't have a Garrick episode for like five more?
So when you told me that, I was kind of disappointed. I'm like, five episodes with no
five
Garrick.
Five episodes without Garrick.
And then as soon as Profit and Loss started, I'm like, that motherfucker, he lied right to my face.
There is something about Garrick, though, something super intriguing. I don't know what it is. There's part of me that says, you know what? If I lived on a space station, I might try that out. I might.
You have to wait in line before for Garrick and I to be finished.
We're fighting over it.
Joe might stab you.
He might. But yeah, I thought they were solid episodes, and I'm really excited to talk about them today. And yeah, you know what's so weird though is like Joe said, we pulled in at the same time, and we were walking in, and I started talking about the episodes with him, and I'm like, crap, we got to save this for the like. It's just so weird to be like. You can't talk to each other before the podcast really starts. You have to like keep it all surface level.
Well, you sent that text yesterday that you love Profit and Loss, and I'm just like, I put my phone down.
Yeah, ignore that one. Not gonna listen to it. So
no, I don't mind talking about it beforehand.
Yeah, but then it's not real and authentic for the audience.
I appreciate that when we get together and record that the conversation is fresh.
Yeah, that's what I try to keep it as.
Yeah, So I appreciate. I try to keep
it organic.
A lot of my deeper thoughts about the episodes to myself until now.
Well, that's my thing. Like I keep my talking points to myself. Like I don't come in like when we start, I don't come in and say, Rob, I really want to talk about this, or Joe, I really want to talk about this. I just wait. And then I force my way into the conversation. Cause that's what I do.
It's the minimal prep work aspect.
I've listened to podcasts where it seems like they are manufactured a little bit more, and it doesn't feel...
There's a lot of show notes, and you can tell that they're keeping on bullet points, and there's
and I don't care for that.
The conversation seems manufactured.
We're definitely all over the place. We'll skip from the beginning of the episode to the end of the episode and kind of bounce around.
I feel like, you know, when we do show meeting, I mean, we're talking
show meeting.
But I feel like after the summary, it's pretty much open season on
whatever we want to talk about.
Open season on the
episode. We can start at the end of the episode. Yeah. We can start at the beginning. It doesn't really matter. But I think to me, like when I listen to a podcast, I want to feel like I'm part of a conversation when I'm listening to it. Yeah. Right. When I listen to Fake Doctors, Real Friends, another one. I feel like I could be jumping in and responding to what they're saying, and they would hear me out, you know.
Isn't Donald Faison like a huge sci-fi guy?
Donald Faison has mentioned Cisco a few times on...
I remember that, actually.
He mentions quite a few sci-fi shows, so...
Man.
I don't know, you know.
Yep. Another one.
Maybe we need to get Donald Faison as a guest on Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
You get to work on that.
Yeah, that ain't going to happen.
Man, yes, our first guest is Donald Faison.
The man has 26 children, and he hides in his closet to podcast. So he literally does. So it's kind of fun.
I'm sure a podcast with like five people listening
is
on his priority.
I know, exactly. Hey, that is not true. We have more than five listeners.
If anything is going to get us to break the 10 listener barrier, Faison.
For like the first month of the podcast, I used to say, what would our one listener say? Our listener would be very upset.
Thanks, Jason Keefe.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. We appreciate you. We appreciate you. But yeah, anyways,
but no, I
pump it pretty hard in my pub theology groups too. And they all roll their eyes at me. I'm like, "Well, I'm busy on Saturday cuz I'm recording."
So they don't take it. They don't listen. Cuz it seems like if you're not a Star Trek fan, then yeah, maybe you might be a bit intimidated or you might think you're not going to get it, but you know,
your testimonial.
But yeah, we talk about episodes of Star Trek, right?
Yeah.
But we talk about it not in a very specific Star Trek way. It's a grander conversation about the themes and
the moral questions, right, the philosophical questions, the cult
that
questions
are in, that are in
come
each
up.
Episode that you can have a conversation and apply it to other aspects of life or.
Right.
My personal favorite are the Quark episodes where there's no moral compass.
But, you know, there is something to this idea. Like, to me, if I did not like Star Trek or I didn't think there's anything to it, right, it might actually be helpful to listen to a show where they say, here are the big questions this episode asks.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to go back and watch it and be like, oh, I was not interested in that, but they brought up some good points.
Well, that's why I think our dynamic is really good, because you got me who's a big fan of the show. You got you who...
Yeah.
A big fan, at least initially.
Yeah, yeah.
But as a Star Trek fan.
Yeah, but
Joe big Star Trek fan.
Is a
yes.
Complete virgin.
Yes, total.
In all walks of life.
He was waiting till he was married to watch Star Trek.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then continued waiting.
And then continued waiting. And then he's just waiting for the okay from the wife.
Yeah.
It's not coming.
Or the.
She doesn't know what she doesn't. She doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah. Or the whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways. But, yeah. I don't know. That was a weird transition on my part. Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. Anyway. No. I agree. These were two very good episodes. I feel like we've had a run where there's been some really solid episodes in this section of the season.
See, I disagree.
So remember, he didn't like the last two? And then he's like, well, I liked them. Your quote was, I didn't like these. It's on Instagram.
Yeah, but then he came in and we had the discussion and you said, I think I like them a little bit more than I thought
Which
initially.
Which again goes to that point of you might not be a Star Trek fan, but maybe this can help you enjoy the episodes more, right?
Right.
Because the conversation helps you find deeper meaning to the episodes that maybe you didn't see before.
And if you really listen to the conversations we have about the episodes,
mm-hmm,
and for a second you just ignore the fact that it's Star Trek, you would want to watch a television show that made you talk like that.
I think so. Yeah.
That asked those questions or provoked that sort of conversation. I would want to watch a TV show like that.
I would too.
And it just so happens to be Star Trek.
Yeah. There are times when I want to just shut my brain down and watch stuff that doesn't make.
Oh, me too. 100%.
It's always tough to decide what that is. I guess like Community could be that. That's a shut down your brain show.
A lot of sitcoms.
But you know, like when I watch The Office,
a lot of sitcoms.
Oh,
when I watch The Office, it's not like that. Like I don't shut down my brain when I watch The Office.
I do. Oh, see, it's so dumb.
So the later seasons are dumb, but the earlier seasons have some really good things to talk about. I think personally.
I watch cartoons because I'm six.
Oh, fair enough.
You do you, man.
I do.
There was something I just saw about Batman the Animated Series.
They're bringing it back.
Bring it back.
A table read or
no? Rumor has it they're doing a follow-up series on HBO Max.
Oh my gosh!
All right.
As long as they bring back Paul.
Paul Dini. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that I meant to send it to you, and that I must have been working at the time.
All right. Well, they need to talk to the people who did Animaniacs so that they can get it right.
But Animaniacs wasn't perfect because it was too heavy on the Animaniacs and not enough on the secondary characters.
I don't think they had the. They did not have the license, or they didn't have the rights to do.
Oh, they lost out on all the characters.
I don't think they had the ability to do all the characters.
That makes a lot of sense.
I don't think it was I think it was more of a out of necessity than choice.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
And that is my criticism of Animaniacs too. They just didn't have the variety that the original had. Mm-hmm. But I think they had to have it that way. And I'm fine with that being the major criticism because everything else was absolutely perfect.
I'd like to see them bring back Tiny Toons, actually.
I love Tiny Toons.
Elvira, especially. I want to hug him and squeeze him and never let him go. Elvira? Well, that was the name, right?
Or Elmira.
Elmira. Elvira is the vampire lady. Yeah. Elmira, yeah. Yeah, I love that one. But it's funny when you go back and watch some of these 90s cartoons. Like some of them hold up pretty well. Some of them not so much. Yeah. Looking at you, Captain Planet.
That never held up in the 90s.
No, it never held up. Yeah, yeah. So, you know.
I liked, it's a Warner Brothers property, but they did a lot of Star Trek references on Tiny Toons from what I remember.
Yep, they did. I do remember that. Speaking of media, I mean, this show is about media. There were some big announcements in media this week. For instance, the Snyder Cut is coming out on March 14th of Justice League.
Are we doing a special episode?
A very special episode. And like all the WB movies coming out on HBO Max. So originally, okay, I originally hated this idea that they were going to stream them and release them at the theaters at the same time. But if it means I can see the movie now instead of having to wait another year and a half before, you know, theaters are really open again, I'm totally okay with that. Like Kong versus Godzilla, the trailer for that looks pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
I've never been a Kong or Godzilla guy.
I like the newer ones. I didn't really...
Puff Daddy song.
Come with me.
Come with me.
I didn't like the old school man in a suit Kongs. I didn't like the Matthew Broderick or Godzilla or whatever, but I like the newer ones. And Eli loves them too, okay, which kind of helps. Like he was... When was the second Godzilla movie that came out? He was like 7? I don't know. He wanted to go see it, and I'm like, are you sure, buddy? It's going to be probably scary, right? Like, yeah. He was 7 years old. And kid was all in. The whole movie, he was, like, watching it, like, super close, super into it.
See, I haven't seen any of the new... I saw the one that you were talking about, Rob, Godzilla from, like, 99 or 2000 or something.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah, Matthew Broderick.
That was a good soundtrack.
Yeah, it was.
It was a great soundtrack. Oh, man. I'm going to Google that while you talk. Go ahead. Continue.
So I'm not familiar with any of the newer ones. I love the old, like really old Godzilla and King Kong movies.
Yeah.
But I'll watch it. It like you said, it's to me it's mindless. It's just an entertaining movie to watch. It's just action. But
this album is fire. Heroes by the Wallflowers. Yep. Come with Me by Puff Daddy. Mm-hmm. Deeper Underground by Jamiroquai. No Shelter.
Come with Me. That's over Kashmir
by Jimmy Page. Yeah, Jimmy. Yeah.
I still have the Godzilla soundtrack I got from the theater in the garage.
Nice.
I think I still have my CD. Yeah.
But you got Rage Against the Machine in it. Ben Folds 5.
No Shelter, right?
Yeah, No Shelter. That's such a good song. Ben Folds 5. Fuel is in there. Remember, Fuel used to be big.
Yep.
Foo Fighters are in there. Green Day with Brain Stew, the Godzilla remix. Silver Chair is in there.
I forgot all about Silverchair.
Holy crap.
That Rage Against the Machine song is so good. They crap all over the movie in it.
Do they really?
Yeah. It's all anti-consumerism.
That's awesome. The movie
soundtrack.
That's awesome. Yeah. Anyways.
Man, that was a great soundtrack. That's
Jamiroquai. Remember Jamiroquai?
I was just listening to him the other day.
I tried to forget him.
Do you remember when after the whole, you know, attempted coup at the Capitol, there was that guy wearing the giant hats or whatever. Jamiroquai released like a tweet that's like, that wasn't me or whatever, because he always wears the hats. Oh, it's fantastic.
You got to distance yourself from those.
You got to distance
yourself. Yeah, you do.
So anyways, a lot of good HBO Max movies coming out.
Suicide Squad, can't wait for it.
I didn't like the first one, but I have a good feeling about the second one, mainly because James Gunn is involved in it.
I thought there were good things about the first one. It just got lost in the story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Because Margot Robbie and Will Smith both were amazing in that movie.
But there is no Will Smith in the next one.
Bummer. But Idris Elba. I mean, come on.
Yeah. And John Cena.
The Peacemaker looks hilarious.
The Peacemaker does. Mortal Kombat is going to be coming to it. Like, they're doing... Like, okay, little things. Judas and the Black Messiah. Never heard of it. Tom and Jerry. Don't care. Godzilla versus Kong. Yeah, there's a Tom and Jerry movie coming out.
No, he's saying, don't care.
Where they're in the real world. Like, it's like...
Sonic was decent.
And that's a good point. But there are cartoons in the real world. I don't think they ever do good with cartoons in the real world.
Space Jam.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
There's Space Jam,
a new
legacy
Roger
comes
Rabbit?
Out.
Yeah.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
You know what? I don't remember it. I only saw it when I was a kid, and I didn't get it as a kid. But that's because it wasn't made for kids.
What's the... Right? There was a Disney movie.
There was also Cool World with Brad Pitt.
Cool World, yeah.
Yeah.
Which was... It is what it is. There was a Disney movie?
With Amy Adams, where it was like
Enchanted. Half, it was really good.
Yeah, that was pretty good. It was like half animated, half real.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
It was pretty good.
Good call.
But the Sonic movie... I was very leery about because I'm like, how are they going to do it? It's either going to be really cheesy and stupid or it's going to be pretty good.
Well, and it already had bad buzz because of the CGI initially when they released the first Sonic. Right.
Because they scared everybody because it looked like a horror show.
Mm-hmm.
But that was pretty solid. So
yeah, and Jim Carrey nailed the role as Dr. Robotnik.
I thought he did too.
I like the little tease at the end with Tails. That was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. You know, they did a really good job
Spoiler
with it.
Spoiler alert, man.
Damn. I know, right?
So yeah, I'm intrigued by it. Tom and Jerry movie.
Tom and Jerry is Jerry moves to New York's finest hotel on the eve of the wedding of the century. The event planner then hires Tom to get rid of him.
Let's go. I'm there.
So we got Godzilla versus Kong. You got Mortal Kombat, which is supposed to be hard R Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. If it's hard R Mortal Kombat, I'm in.
In the Heights, which is a Lin-Manuel Miranda. I'm not interested. Space Jam Legacy with LeBron.
No Jordan. None of my time.
Suicide Squad. Malignant. Mm. Yeah. Dune. I am pumped for Dune. Did I say I am pumped for Dune?
You are pumped.
You didn't. I didn't hear that.
I'm pumped for it.
Not at all.
The Matrix 4, which Matrix 2 and 3 were terrible, but I'll give it a shot. Whatever.
I'll let me know if I should give it a shot.
Mm. And then
after 2 and 3, I'm out, man.
And what else? That's about it that I can think of. There's a Clint Eastwood movie in there, but I cannot stand Clint Eastwood.
Let me guess. Clint Eastwood plays an old racist and end of movie? That's it?
Comedy ensues.
Based on the book name, Cry Macho follows a one-time rodeo star and horse breeder who sets out to retrieve a young man's son from his alcoholic mother and on a journey back...
Did you say mutter? His mutter was a
mutter. Mutter. And on the journey back forms a kinship with the young boy. So in other words, he's a cranky, nasty, mean old man who meets this little kid and forms a bond and it softens him up.
So Gran Torino 2?
Gran Torino.
Sounds like that episode.
Part 2, the Torining.
Sounds like that DS9 episode we watched with Odo last time.
Could be. So anyways, I think you're at like the movie theaters. You're kind of screwed no matter what you do. Not the theaters. The whatchamacallums. Not the theaters. Who's the people who make the movies?
Studios.
The studios. Yeah. That's the word for it. They're screwed no matter what they do.
We have to apologize for him.
A lot of coffee. Even if you you hold off on the movies, you lose a lot of money, you make your investors mad, right? Or you release the movies, you make your investors happy, but you make the directors mad.
Yeah.
What do you do?
Well, apparently Wonder Woman 84 did phenomenal
on
streaming it.
But Patty Jenkins was pissed about it. She didn't want it to be released that way. Which I get it, because that movie had been delayed 2 years. It's been in the can for multiple years.
Right.
But, so, all right. I get it. The director directs the movie, right? It's their vision.
Right.
But ultimately, it's whose money is paying for the movie?
Right.
The studios?
Which is what George Lucas did, right? He's like, screw it. I'm cutting out the studios. I'm doing it myself.
Right. So I get that they're... Obviously, the ideal situation is for the director and the studio to be in sync on the vision for releasing it to the masses, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not, I mean, it's the studio is there to make money, right? And the best way to make money is to put out good films.
Yeah.
And the director is there to make a good film.
Yeah.
And make money.
And sometimes the studio gets in the way of that.
Right. But, I mean... You can't. I understand the studio. I understand where the studio is coming from.
Oh, me
they're
too.
Sitting on. They're sitting on all these films, and you know, for no reason that they have any involvement in. They didn't ask to be in this situation.
Yes, they did. This was all a conspiracy.
Yeah,
all of it. The China virus was manufactured by Warner Brothers.
It's all television. It's television versus movies.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, they're sitting on these films.
There you go.
You know, they're sitting on these movies with nothing to do with them. They can't hold them until theaters come back. Because when they come back,
excuse me, no theaters are left except for AMC, which stock is worth $400 a share. Wall Street bets, baby.
But you know, the theaters aren't going to be what they used to be. And if they ever get back to what they were pre-COVID, which was on their last leg pre-COVID, it's going to be years before they're there again.
See, I would argue this is a healthy move for theaters too, because or filmmakers too. Theaters were already transitioning towards spectacle movies, right? They've been doing that for the last 20 years, right? It used to be a point where you'd go see a good drama or whatever at theaters. Not anymore, right? It's the Marvel movies. It's the Star Wars movies. It's, you know,
Chris Nolan.
It's those big spectacle movies, which is chasing out all those indie movies. They're not having a place anymore in the theaters.
Well, that's what these cinemaplexes are, is these big movies. And then you have these smaller art house
mom and
theaters.
Pop right. places, yeah.
There's a couple in like Plymouth and Farmington and Ann Arbor.
Yep.
And
Redford.
No, that's where you go to see a film.
Right. But now they're getting released on HBO Max right away, right? Like the one Judas and the Black Messiah, that would not be in the theaters, or it wouldn't have done well in the theaters.
They make one screen.
One screen, yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like when I saw
five show times.
When I saw What You Leave Behind, the DS9 documentary, I saw it at a theater.
That's right. I do remember you talking about
so
that.
So they
on
do
Facebook
it, but they just kind of bury it in the corner of the theater.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think this will be good for film, honestly. It was already moving towards the big spectacle movies being the only movies in the cinemas. All it's done is accelerated that, right? Are filmmakers like Christopher Nolan going to be angry, even though he is the big spectacle movie maker? Yeah, they're going to be angry, but
rumor has it he's leaving Warner Brothers over it.
He is, yeah. But the reality of the situation is, this is going to allow your art, because to them it's their art, it's going to be allowed your art to be consumed by more people, and don't you want that?
Right.
And this tells you something about these directors who are complaining about it, because they're looking at the financial aspect.
Well, the directors are looking at it also this way. If you look at Chris Nolan, he wants it to be seen the way he filmed it.
Intended
it. Because like on the IMAX screen, for example, he's a big IMAX guy.
Like freaking Tenet was made.
Is he the one that railed against people watching movies on their phone?
Yes. He railed against that. It was a couple years ago.
Because he wants it to be engulfed. You want you to... Yeah.
It's a sensory experience.
We saw Tenet at home, and you can't tell me that would have just blown your mind in an IMAX theater.
I probably would have liked the movie a lot more. And that was the same thing when I saw Interstellar. I saw Interstellar in the theaters, and the soundtrack and the visuals blew me away. And now when I rewatch that movie, I think back to my first experience in the theater, and it helps me enjoy that movie more. Now, if I saw that movie for the first time at home, I don't know if my enjoyment would have been as high. Like, I rate that movie as like an 8 or 9 out of 10. Maybe if I just saw it at home, it'd be a 6 or 7 out of 10.
So the Henry Ford IMAX Theater you've been there.
Yep.
The screen is it puts you up against the screen. It's a trip. So my biggest memory there is seeing Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol there when he's climbing the Burj Khalifa.
Yep.
And it goes to IMAX format.
Oh yeah,
and you're just
isn't that the one we saw?
Holy!
It's anxiety inducing.
Like, it is.
It was the way it was shot and the massive size of the screen.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was Wiz Khalifa's best role.
But you can't. That just makes the movie so much better. So I actually get the artistic vision of the director as well. Yeah, sure, it's financial, but you can't tell me they didn't want you to see it like that.
Yeah.
Like,
but
the
good
movie
art should be able to be consumed in multiple different forms of film, and the art still holds up.
In most cases, it does, but it only enhances the art.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, if it's a good story, the story will translate over a phone.
I guess,
like that scene, you're not gonna get the full effect of a scene like that.
Yeah,
over a phone or on a TV or a tablet or whatever you're watching, but when you're sitting in the theater it's different.
It's kind of like I see the Mona Lisa in person or I pull it up on my phone. It's a totally different experience, right? It's that same kind of idea.
It's when you're looking at pictures of me, you're like, oh, the real thing's so much better.
I can't wait till Saturday.
That's exact. I know. I just sit here scrolling pictures of Rob. Ooh, there's Rob without a smile on his face in a picture. There's Rob without a smile on his face on his picture. Because Rob never smiles in pictures.
I don't know how to smile.
You do, though. You smile all the time. And now you're like fighting it.
He's fighting it. There it is.
Explicit content about to follow.
Rob smiling.
Bow, chicka, bow, wow. I don't know. Got nothing.
Where'd you go get that from?
Explicit content.
That's a movie that I would have liked to see in the theater that I saw at home was 1914.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And I know that it was released pre-COVID, so I would have had the opportunity, but I didn't get an opportunity to see it before.
It was like January.
Yeah, it was of last year. About a year ago, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I watched it over quarantine, and I was just enamored with everything about that film.
Well, the cinematography is amazing. Have you watched, there's a YouTube video about how they did the one shot the whole time.
Yeah, there's I bought it on 4K, and there's a, it's an amazing watch.
Yep.
And then I watched all the documentary stuff afterwards because I was so
I'm a sucker for war movies in general.
Yeah. Oh. It's
not so much like
it's the white guy in me. I love war movies. I don't know.
To me, it's not like the violence of the war movies. It's the relationship the people.
Oh,
build.
Yeah.
Like Band of Brothers to me.
It's the story.
It's the story.
The violence enhances the story. Because of what's being told. Because
what they've been through and how it changes them as people, yep. Right? And you can't understand how it's changed them until you see what they experience.
And
like Bastogne in Band of Brothers, where they're in this forest and they're just being bombed the crap out of every single day for months, right?
And it's the fact that these are based on real stories.
Yeah.
Or in some cases, they're just actual real stories that are being told.
Yeah.
So it's easier to get emotionally invested in the story, whereas if you're watching, I don't know, something that is fabricated, everything, but it's war or it's, you know, I don't know, but those stories it's a bit more involved to get emotionally attached to that. But when it's like World War I, II, anything that was based in reality that actually happened, it draws you in immediately.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah. You can really profit at the loss of what these people deal with, which is a good seg into our next episode.
It was a segue.
Loss.
The jury's still out on how good or bad that was.
I was just looking at our time. We're at 28 minutes, and we have not talked Star Trek.
We did in the beginning. We did. We said the name of our podcast.
So let's talk about profit and loss. Let's talk about this episode. Who wants to sum it up?
Rob does.
Rob gets this one.
My mouth is full, man.
That is what, who said?
He said.
He said? Well, do it. That's what he said. But it is that's what she said, just for the record. Well,
that's what anybody could say.
Right, but that's not the joke, Joe. Dang.
I'm ruining that's what she said.
Yeah.
So some Cardassian dissidents are coming to the station because they're highly damaged. The commander brings them on board. Finds out they were being shot at by Cardassians because they're leading an underground movement to get the power of Cardassia away from the military who actually runs a Cardassian government.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the girls on board used to shack up with Quark back in the day. Quark's head over heels for her. And
Lang.
What's that?
Well, her name is Lang. Sorry.
That's all right. And then, I lost my momentum.
I'm sorry.
It's gone.
She meets up with Quark.
And Garrick's in the episode. Garrick tells the Cardassians they're there. What's his intention? I don't know. We'll find out. And they go through it, and they get Quark helps her get off
the station. All right. Long dramatic pause. solid wrap up. Good job. Cue clapping. We need. This will be a show meeting. We need a soundboard thing so I can hit a button.
We all need headphones for that?
We could. We don't necessarily need it.
Yeah, we can look at it.
Can we just probably? Yeah, we could.
Yeah.
Create a soundboard off of that. Yep. Anyways, moving on. Episode. Let's talk about it.
I remember, because you guys already said you liked it a lot. Yep. Ira Stephen Burr, who's the producer of the show, showrunner,
yeah,
actually didn't like the episode because Quirk comes across as too heroic.
Oh, and he wants him to stay scumbaggy.
Shady. Yeah.
But
love
like
does
that
weird things to people.
Yes. And Garrick says at the end of the episode, nobody understands it. Love.
Yep.
So I liked the way that Quirk came off.
Yeah.
He still was Quirk. But you could tell that he was in love with this woman.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, it when you're in love with somebody like that, it changes you.
Yeah.
Like you still are yourself, but you're going through these feelings and, you know, you can't understand why. I lost my train of
thought. Do you guys know who?
Mary Crosby.
There you go. Go ahead.
Is related to Bing Crosby.
And
Denise Crosby.
There you go.
Tasha Yar.
Is that who?
Tasha Yar was on Next Generation.
Hmm.
But Bing Crosby, Joe, since you don't know, was a famous singer back in the day.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He was in, was he in Dave Matthews Band?
That was his daughter. That was his daughter, wasn't it?
No.
It was the aunt of Denise Crosby.
Aunt of Denise Crosby related to... Okay, hold on. I'm going to find this out. Mary Crosby. Right. Mary Crosby.
Did you guys get the
only daughter. Okay, you're right. Only daughter of singer and actor Bing Crosby from his second marriage to Catherine Graham.
She also shot JR.
She did. She was on Dallas. And if you...
Spoiler alert.
She, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a big spoiler.
Yeah.
Back in the day, that was a huge spoiler.
Oh, I remember.
My gosh, people... And then Patrick Dempsey woke up and he was in the shower and it was all a dream.
I don't remember that.
That was the big thing about Dallas. Like, it was all like he imagined it all.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And people were outraged about it.
Thank God there wasn't the internet.
Are you getting that mixed up with Newhart?
Newhart was the
stuff. They do that in...
Newhart pulled it off beautifully, though.
Dallas, yeah. Patrick, Dempsey...
You know about Newhart?
What?
You know about Newhart?
Come on, you know I Newhart.
Oh,
it's old.
Not Patrick Dempsey. Patrick Dempsey is from Grey's Anatomy.
I thought so. I'm going to let him go with this because he's probably seen
Patrick,
it and I haven't.
Patrick, what was his name? Bobby Ewing.
No idea.
Is played by Patrick Duffy. Patrick Duffy.
Oh, yeah. Step by step guy.
Step by step. So he was killed off in it. Patrick Duffy was killed off in the closing moments of Dallas's 9th season finale. Pamela Ewing awoke to the sound of running water. Walking in the bathroom, she saw her ex-husband, Bobby Ewing, the very dead, recently run over by speeding vehicle. Bobby Ewing greet her with a smile. So they were shocked because she had dreamed it all. So, yes, they killed a character and then they brought him back.
Okay, I think I have regained my composure about Quark being in love.
Okay, do it.
It just, he was Quark, but you could tell that his affection for this woman kind of trumped who he was at
all
the
reason.
Time. Yeah,
right?
it
jumped
goes
out
beyond
of the bar. Like he stopped.
Oh yeah,
he stopped doing like yep. when he saw her. He'll
run into the ground in a few months.
He's, yeah, when he said Rom can have it, he'll run into the ground in a few months. But that was such a great
that
throwaway
was a great
line.
Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, it does it. It goes beyond reason.
Mm-hmm.
He's willing to, you know, just abandon everything he has on the ship or on the station
for her.
For her.
But also, he wasn't still a great guy, right? I mean, he upset her greatly the last time they were together. He betrayed her, right? And she said, "I thought you were a man of honor, and I'm a Ferengi. You should have known better," right?
Like, I wrote that
right.
line down
so
too.
He still is. Quark, like, I don't think he's a hero in this episode.
Yeah, I don't think he comes up.
I think that's not a fair statement about him.
Heroic, not a hero.
He has no interest in saving anyone unless it benefits him, right?
Correct.
A yep. hero saves people,
well, wouldn't
not for their own benefit.
Oh, yeah, because he would have tossed the other two off out the window.
If it would have saved her.
And he tried.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
But wouldn't he come across semi-heroic to her?
I mean, yeah, but...
Maybe, but... I mean, he's... When you really analyze it, it is whatever it does benefit him. If it didn't benefit him, he wouldn't. You know.
Well, yeah. I mean, what makes a hero, right? I mean,
we can be heroes
just for one day.
You guys are.
We can be heroes. Now I'm transitioning into Moulin Rouge in a second here.
Yeah, don't do that.
Oh, that's a great movie.
It's a piece of fire shit.
You are a piece of fire.
Crap.
Yeah. All right.
All right, we haven't talked about Garrick in the episode yet. Can we?
Yeah, I do.
Was he in the episode?
Because
I didn't know that.
Do you actually think that Garrick would have killed Quark to return home?
I think there was a long play by Garrick. I think he knew exactly what he was doing from the get go, and was all for Cardassia.
You do think it was a long play?
Yeah, I think in the long run he knew they would get caught. He notified him to get the people to the station. To then turn it to whatever he wanted to do with that situation.
So you're saying...
I think he let the guy disarm him so that guy's defense would be down so he could shoot him in a few minutes.
Oh, see, I don't think so. I think...
Well, I think he let him disarm him because he knew he had Quark's other gun.
Exactly. So yeah, he knew he could shoot him in just a few moments.
Okay, so here's what I think. Cardassia, at this point, is much like... I'm getting political. Is much like the supporters of Donald Trump right now, right? In the sense that they are fervently loyal to they're fervently loyal to Cardassia. And even though Cardassia has turned its back on Garrick, right? Even though Donald Trump has turned his back on some of his followers, if Donald Trump were to ever say, come back, they're going to come back and kiss and make out with him, right? And I think that's the same thing with Garrick. There's such a fierce loyalty towards Cardassia that he will do whatever it takes, even though they've hurt him to such an extent.
Well, yeah, because when the
that was a bad metaphor.
Who was the other guy?
Galtron.
Yeah, when he came to visit Garrick in his shop, he teased him with the idea of coming back, not as his past being kind of erased or absolved, and you saw Garrick's eyes light up, right? Like, mm-hmm. That's something that he desired, to go back home and to be able to live a relatively normal life back home.
Sorry, my brain just exploded because of what you said. Continue your thought, and then I'll...
But, so, I think that desire to go back home is there. I think it's more being in Cardassia and being home than it is loyal to the government. Cardassia,
yeah. Okay. So, you shut your mouth, because I got something to say, and I'm going to forget it.
Go for it, because I won't forget mine.
Quark and Garrick essentially have the same exact story. They abandon all sense of reason for something they love fiercely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. At the end of the
episode. Mind blown. I didn't even think about that till just now.
At the end of the episode, they pretty much say that.
Shut up. I didn't see that part.
Well, think about it, because he says, we do weird things for love.
Oh, gosh. I didn't even...
Garrick was talking about Cardassia.
This is my denseness. Yeah, okay.
It's all right. I mean...
And Garrick's love for Cardassia... Like, so he loves Cardassia, right? So what's better for Cardassia? Those people living to continue their message to reform?
Yeah.
Or... I think that's that was his long play.
Okay.
I don't think it was... I don't think he was ever going to side with...
With the what's his name?
Gold.
Taran.
I don't think he was ever going to side with him. I think it was to get those three out of there safely by any means necessary. I don't think he would have killed Quark, but I think he would have...
Gone through Quark.
Gone through him, yeah. I think he would have removed him
or something.
Yeah, removed him from the situation to get those three out safely.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the first time I was watching through it, I was going like, how can Garrick be duped so easily? But then I actually thought about it and said, no, he's doing this... on purpose. He's being manipulated on purpose.
Okay.
Right. And the reason I think that, because he had the opportunity to kill Quark, right?
Right.
And he had the opportunity to kill Gul Turan. And what did he do? Who'd he kill?
Gul Turan.
Because he knows he's ultimately bad for Cardassia. That's ultimately bad for Cardassia.
Okay. All right. Well, so here... Okay.
And it's clear he didn't like Turan anyway. So he's probably looking for...
Oh, Turan didn't like him. They hated each other. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he totally was.
He's like, I get to kill this guy? Cool.
Yeah exactly. So a couple other questions I have about this. The episode never really explains what Hoag and Rekkelin had done, or Rekkelin had done, for terrorism, correct?
It was
trumped up charges by the Cardassian government.
It was their ideas that were the terrorist attack.
Okay. So I was thinking about this a couple different ways, right? So the Cardassian government was accusing them of terrorism just because of the thoughts and the words they were saying, right? But let's say they actually were doing terroristic acts. To me, at what point does terrorism, is terrorism justified? Like, that's what I was thinking about in this episode. Okay, so what if they're terrorists? If they're trying to take down a militaristic fascist government that oppresses and kills people,
they're majority at that point.
Well, I mean,
is it justified?
At that point, it's only terrorism in one perspective, and that's from the Cardassians' perspective. So is it really terrorism?
It's the same thing with the Bajorans. Think about it.
Well, it's the same thing in our world, right? What do you consider terrorism? What do Americans consider terrorism versus someone in the Middle East consider terrorism, right?
Well, so the Cardassians ran by the government. The government views any opinion outside of the Cardassian military as treason, let's just say.
Mm.
Yeah.
So these guys were talking about a free Cardassia.
Mm-hmm.
That was their terroristic act.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, so them speaking
immediately is a terroristic act.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the way I kind of view it. They didn't do anything. It was just they're terrorists because they're going against the government.
Okay.
Which is only terrorism if you are the government.
Right. You're afraid of people, you know, speaking their mind.
I don't know if you've ever heard me talk about this show before, but there's this great show called Battlestar Galactica.
Never heard of it.
And there is a season where basically they have to become terrorists against the Cylons, the robots. And they're trying to talk about, is there ever such thing as justified terrorism? And it blows your mind. Because it's basically a playoff of World War II with Vichy France versus... And Vichy France was the puppet France that German...
Well, this whole episode's taken over. Shot at Casablanca.
Yes, it is. I spent a lot of time reading about a lot of this episode. So anyways, solid episode. I like the questions it has about terrorism. I like what it has in justified death. Like the questions about justified death. Is there ever a such thing? The next episode is about that as well. Blood Oath is about that too. But it's a really good episode.
How about Quark and Garrick in the clothier shop? Yeah. Talking Garrick.
Yeah.
Both of them were talking Garrick. I thought that was pretty fun, but Quark could very easily adapt to speaking Garrick style.
Yeah. I did also like at the very beginning, Garrick and Bashir, their conversation that they were having at the beginning of the episode. Yeah. I just love Bashir. The way he looks at Garrick is just like, they're about to kiss.
That's the way I look at Garrick.
I know, but like the relationship is so cool. I love their relationship. And it's built, their relationship is built off mistrust of one another.
I think,
but it's still
so fascinated.
It's still a genuine relationship, right? Like they don't trust one another, or at least, I mean, Garrick doesn't probably trust anyone, but.
I love that Garrick just speaks so vaguely to Bashir and it just hooks Bashir in every single time.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I like in this episode that Garrick told Bashir truth and he outruled it when he said, so maybe you're a spy or maybe you're an outcast. Yep. And then he goes, maybe I'm an outcast spy.
Or maybe you're both, how can you be both? And he goes, I never said I was either.
Yeah,
he just says it with such sass, and you're just like, oh,
yeah.
The Andrew Robinson find on playing Garrick was just so spot on. Yeah,
it's good. It's really good. That's really good.
He tells a story. He's just so expressive with his eyes too. With his expressions.
Here goes Joe's love fest.
Oh, he gets me every time.
Does he make your heart a pitter patter?
He does. I get filled with this warm sense of love and happiness. And
as long as it's in your chest, that's all I care about.
Oh, it's throughout my entire body, head to toe.
Oh gosh, I need an adult.
Yeah, wrong room for that.
Wrong room for the adults.
Good
episode though. Anything else that we need?
It was enjoyable. Yeah.
Should we move on to Blood Oath?
Let's go to Blood Oath.
Who wants to sum up Blood Oath? I feel like it's going to be me because Joe just stared at me. All right, well, so
you sum it up because I have some words on this episode.
Blood Oath. There's a lot of Kleons on the station all of a sudden. Odo's having all these problems with these Kleons. They're all being jerk faces. Turns out these Kleons knew Jadzia Dax, but they didn't know Jadzia. They knew Curzon Dax from 81 years ago. Basically, back in the day, these Kleons destroyed the base of a pirate leader known as the Albino, which I love how they referred to him, the Albino, throughout the episode. This guy retaliates by basically infecting the firstborn sons with a deadly virus.
Gangsta move, by the way.
It was a good one. Curzon was a godson to one of the Kleons' murdered sons, essentially, and they swore a blood oath at this time to find and kill the Albino. So 81 years later, Jadzia is like, Gotta follow this blood oath. Boom. Let's do it. Let's go kill us an albino. So they go. They go and kill that albino. Moral conundrums ensue. That is the episode summation.
Awesome. Okay, so for me, I love these political episodes.
Yeah.
But I'm more comfortable with when it's Cardassians.
Because you know them now.
Yes, because I'm more familiar. Now, when it goes, now, I loved this episode, but I was just so, I felt like I was out, a little out of my element, even though the entire series, I'm out of my element.
You don't know the Klingons. And like,
right.
Klingons.
But I want to know more. When I watch them, I'm so intrigued and fascinated. You will.
You'll get to know them today.
Yeah. Oh, it's true.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, Star Trek 2. Yes.
Star Trek 3.
Oh, that's right. Star Trek 3.
Yep. But so the Klingons, you starting season 4, you'll really get to know the Klingons.
They really come in because that's when Worf comes in, right?
So I was looking up the battle that they had mentioned in here with the Romulans,
mm-hmm.
and just looking up some Klingon stuff, and it just makes me want to know more, but I don't know more, so I feel like I didn't appreciate this episode as much as I could have had I known more historically or been more familiar with the Klingons in general.
Yeah, I get that. That makes sense.
Yeah. Did you do any show, like a production reading beforehand?
Not in this one, no.
So the three Klingons, Kang, Koloth, and Kor.
Original series.
Mm-hmm. All from the original series.
Oh, I did read that
from
part.
The 60s.
Yeah.
But but back in the 60s series, the Klingons didn't wear that makeup. They were basically just humans with fancy mustaches, essentially. So this was their first time wearing the makeup. They actually had to find one of the actors who had not been acting anymore, right?
Like, something like that, yeah.
Or something like that.
So were all three of them the same actor from the original series?
All three of them,
wow,
yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Played the same characters, too.
Yep.
Yep.
So that's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Can we just talk about the fact that they just kept referring to it as the albino throughout the episode? I feel really bad for albinos in this world right now.
Well,
They're personally attacked by Deep Space Nine.
Maybe they didn't want to give this guy a name.
I did like how he was a Klingon, though, who just had light skin.
Right.
That's all he was.
Yeah. In Discovery, they had the albino in the first season.
They did have the albino, yeah. I did not like their Klingon redesign.
That was terrible.
I like the way they talked and everything. I like that.
I didn't. It didn't feel natural. They talked so slow.
But that's okay. I have a problem when shows try to make every single alien near human, the human way of talk and thought and everything. I like that. I like how the Klingons were really religious in Discovery. I like how the Klingons were really intelligent in Undiscovered Country. But then when you get to like Next Generation and a little bit of this, a little bit of Deep Space Nine, they make the Klingons kind of idiots again.
Well, it's, you look, the way I look at it is the people that they were dealing with
in
the Undiscovered Country. Upper class Klingons.
So
that's a good point. Yeah.
So what I get, they value loyalty over intelligence
and war. Yeah.
In the long run, they don't want profit. They just want victory.
Right.
And they want
honor.
Honor.
Yeah.
So like, for instance,
some Asian influence there.
So for instance,
ancient culture.
Yep, I felt that.
Say you have a war. Don't get taken as a prisoner of war because that's less honorable. That's dishonor. Right. But if you die in battle, that's a huge honor. So even if you lose, but you die in battle, that's
more honorable
than losing than being captured. Like Donald Trump.
They like the quote
when he ripped on being captured.
Today is a good day to die.
Yeah.
Yep. So
revenge is a dish best served cold.
Yep.
I can't
wait till we watch the Undiscovered Country.
We could just start with Undiscovered Country.
There's backstory.
I know, two.
And three.
Yeah, okay.
And four.
Gosh.
Do we skip five?
We skip five.
Okay, thank God.
Why does God need a starship?
Excuse me, but it was so... Okay, let's talk about DS9. I could...
All right.
So, by the way, Kang's voice, the deep voice that
Kang
he had
the Conqueror.
Was pretty awesome. It's like... I just did. I was like, man, that guy's got a great
role. Yeah,
for this.
He did. Yep. He was a great role for that. So, okay, let's get into some things with this episode, though. So you didn't know the Klingons as well, but I want to talk about Jadzia. All right, Dax here. Is she obligated to that blood oath of Curzon?
If you go by Trill Society, no, because no current host is responsible for the actions of a past host.
Right. Right.
But if you had the symbiote, and this is how you felt about this guy, and especially if that was probably your most recent lifetime, you might.
Okay. So I found this episode was very wishy-washy on what a symbiote remembers versus doesn't remember and what they're bound to and what they're not. So anyways, when she was talking with Kira, and Kira's like, you don't know what killing a person is going to do to you, right? She's speaking from experience because, you know.
I thought that was a very heartfelt scene.
I love that scene. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. But Jadzia does, because she has all these other Dax symbiotes in her, who, especially Curzon. She knows what it means to kill.
Curzon was a diplomat.
But he still did some really shady crap.
Mostly females.
Well, but he did do stuff. Or maybe the other Dax symbiotes did. I have no doubt in my mind that some of those symbiotes killed people. A lot of people.
Oh, I'm sure.
Well,
I'm sure.
So along the line.
So Jadzia would know what it would be like to kill people. And so that part wouldn't be the conundrum.
But Jadzia Dax doesn't.
Jadzia Dax doesn't. But so to me, the conundrum
Wait,
for
why?
Her.
Well, just a different entity, different person.
But she would have the memories.
Right,
she'd
because, have the memories, and the feelings. Because what, was it season? No, it was season two when they did this. They're going to remove the symbiote, right?
Yes.
And she ultimately got it back, but she immediately said, "I'm filled with all these feelings that he just
she was
imposed
having
on the symbiote."
And same with when he took her as a symbiote, it changed him as a person, right?
Right.
And he felt deeply for what she was going through, and actually for a minute there, kind of thought about giving it back based off of what he felt about what Jadzia went through.
Right.
So. What makes this situation so different in that? So that's where I'm talking about. The series kind of changes the rules a little bit to make the story better, which I thought this was a fantastic story. So I'm not knocking that.
Right.
I value consistency, and I think they were a little inconsistent with the character.
That's fair.
I like that scene with Kira, though.
Oh, yeah, it was a great scene.
Yeah. And, you know, Kira tries to come off like she's a bit more pristine than she actually is, but she's got a dirty past.
She's got a lot of blood on her hands. Yep. She's killed a lot of innocent people in the name of freeing Bajor, right?
Yeah.
And maybe that was justified, also, maybe not, but she's not, you know, she likes to come off pretty righteous to certain people.
Yeah.
And she's not righteous.
No, she's not at all. But I do like how she wasn't even, it's not that she was lecturing Jadzia here. Sisko lectures Jadzia, but I think Kira is a really heartfelt moment, and it's very much a whole, like, you're going to do what you're going to do, but I want to tell you what I've experienced, you know, kind of a thing, where Sisko is like, you're going to do this, but you're not going to come back the same, and you're going to feel worse for this, and I don't know what I'm going to think. Like, it was a lot of finger wagging, where Kira didn't
now,
do the finger
Now, Kira
wagging.
Doesn't have the past relationship that with Dax that Sisko does, and also Sisko is the commander, so he's got that. It's a double edged sword there. He has the history,
so the friendship and the command,
right? And then he also has the power.
That. Which okay, so that could change. Okay, that's a really good point.
I have that whole interaction right there.
You wrote it, or you just copied it from
copied it.
Here's a question though: would killing someone as terrible as the albino really weigh on you? If you have killed before, right, and you've killed, I mean, I, you know, let's just assume Dax has killed many people over the span of a lifetime. Would it really bother you that much to kill a murderer? Every death the same if you've killed one person?
No, I don't think so. I think, well, speaking as somebody who's never killed anybody,
on record,
I've never killed anybody.
On record, you've never killed anybody?
I have never.
Or like, you've never killed anybody. This is you saying.
My name is William Hosking, and I have never killed anybody.
That we know of, or you've never actually killed anyone. Let's just be clear on
that.
That
I have never killed anybody.
Okay. Okay. All right.
On God.
I got a Bible. I got you.
Yeah.
So speaking as somebody who's never killed anybody, I can't say whether or not it would weigh on you any less than, you know, killing an innocent person. I'm assuming it would, but I think there's at least some sort of justification or some sort of, you know, you can reconcile it a bit easier if the person who you've eliminated is a bad person.
Bad dude.
Right.
So, at the end of the episode, she lectures, or the albino lectures Jadzia, right? He's like, go ahead, kill me in cold blood. Is that really killing him in cold blood? Like, you tried to kill them getting into there. Just because you don't have a weapon at this point, what makes that, why is that so different than if 2 seconds ago you had a weapon? Is that cold blood at that point? I don't think it would have been.
Because he gave himself up, too.
Yeah, that's true.
And the whole question of killing somebody, you know, of course, just with everything, the individual reacts differently.
Right.
You may be more remorseful than me than killing somebody, you know, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm. No, not vice versa.
Probably not.
You wouldn't be more remorseful than him.
I could never kill someone. I'd be a train wreck. I'd cry for hours. I don't care how terrible they are.
What if it was self-defense?
What if it was because I'm hurt either?
I don't know.
Look at us trying to get him to kill somebody.
On record.
I truly believe there's no such thing as an irredeemable person, right? So like,
right, we've had this discussion.
Yeah,
but,
we have. So like, I don't know. Self-defense.
But are you in when you're in a moment and you're in mortal danger and it's your life or a loved one's life.
I probably
life,
would do
or
what
somebody
I
else's
do.
Life. You don't have time to reconcile that person at the time.
Like right. Superman.
But
and
this
Man
doesn't
of Steel.
Mean that it's not going to rack my conscience for
no,
the
I'm
rest
not
of my life.
But I'm just saying you said you couldn't kill anybody as a blanket
statement.
I couldn't
consciously kill someone. How about that? Maybe if, like, in the heat of the moment, like, defense.
Yeah, there's a sort of, like, you almost, not black out, but it's something
fight
else.
Fight or flight.
Yeah, something else takes over, and it's, yeah. You have to make a decision.
So, like, yeah, whereas some people could, like, okay, this person tried to harm my child, right? So I defended my child, and they died because of it. So, therefore, I'm okay with this, right? I did what I had to do, and I can make peace with that. My whole life, I would go, yeah, I did this, but could I have done something differently? Because now I've taken human. That would
right.
rack
yeah, it would,
my brain.
I think it would.
Rob's like, nope, I'd be okay. In fact, that would just be the start of it.
I think everybody would have that kind of after effect where you're looking at it going, fuck, excuse me, crap.
You can say whatever word you want. Sorry, I'm eating
chips. You kind of look at it and you would have that guilt, for lack of a better word. But if someone came after one of my kids, I do what I do.
Right.
There's a
defense.
Can we delete this part of this episode?
No, but I'm not saying you wouldn't. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying, what would it do to you in the future?
Right. And I mean,
he's like, I'll be fine.
I mean, I think, I don't know. I can't imagine you would just wipe it off. Just you'd be fine.
My little notes I'm taking for like Facebook poster or Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah.
We talk killing people.
But I can't imagine that you would just continue on with your life and you'd never think about it again, right? It would just never come up. I think it would weigh on you to a certain degree depending on the person. Now, for some people, it'd be crippling. Like they would just never get over the fact that they had killed somebody. And for some people, maybe another person on this show, they would think about it every once in a while and they'd be like,
jokes.
Oh, yeah, I did that, and but I'm justified in why I did it and I'm okay with it.
And I'm
going to
tell everyone about that day.
It's totally jokes.
No, I know. I know. It's all hypothetical.
All hypothetical.
But
yeah, I think there's people all across those. So
like,
what would Jadzia be? Let's say Jadzia did kill this guy in cold blood. Would she justify it, or would she be racked with guilt for the rest of her life?
I don't think she would consider it cold blood, and I think she would be okay with it in the long run. I think it would weigh.
I think it'd be hard for her at first, but then eventually yeah. she would.
Oh, see, I don't. I think it would wreck her. I feel weird, like, because this whole time I'm like, why is it a big deal? She's done it before, but I think because Jadzia's in there,
it's a different entity.
It's a different, yeah. So
yeah.
She knows the feeling of killing. She understands that, and she understands it from all of their
from
perspectives.
Memory, but not. Direct memory.
So then she does it and she thinks she can do it. And then the second after it happens, instant regret. And I think that would drive her out of Starfleet. I think she'd be gone. I think she'd be done. Like from a personal standpoint.
Okay. Yeah.
So the idea of killing somebody, if you think about it as like a police officer, right? Mm-hmm. Their job is to protect and defend, right? Part of their job is sometimes using lethal a firearm force. And lethal force or killing. You have to eliminate a threat, right?
Yeah.
And that's part of their job. It's what they signed up to do. Mm-hmm. They have agreed that they are capable of doing this, making these decisions, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when it happens, it does weigh on them. They're immediately have to go through
counseling
and to make sure that they're okay with what happened before they're able to get back into that position again.
Right. And there's some cats that don't.
Right, it wrecks them forever, but then there are also some cats who kill multiple people on the job.
What I'm saying is those are people who signed up to do something that they knew could potentially result in the death of somebody else.
But knowing and doing are two different ballparks.
But also, you don't go, I'm going to become a cop and I'm going to get to kill somebody.
No. No, but you do...
That's kind of what Jadzia is doing right now. I have a blood oath and I'm going to go kill somebody.
I think
it's premeditated.
Yeah.
But it's Klingon way.
So
that's another one.
That's the judicial system.
Yeah. But that's part of what you would do in a military under war circumstances, right? In war times.
Yeah.
You sign up to defend your country, and you know you're signing up to go kill somebody else with a different ideology or a different, or they're threatening you, or you know there's something that's going on. You sign up for that.
Mm-hmm.
So there is an aspect of signing up to kill.
I think in the military there's an expectation you will kill. I think signing up to be a police officer there should not be.
I agree.
And I think that's a problem.
I think those are two different examples.
Yeah.
I was using, but
okay,
the police one you
they're wrong, but I get you. No, I'm kidding.
No, I mean you sign up to be a police officer with the understanding that that's an aspect of that job.
Yes.
Whereas you sign up for the military with almost an expectation that it's
that
a part
this
of
will
the
happen.
Job.
Right. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Okay. Going back to what you're just saying about Klingon stuff. So first of all, I want to backtrack. Didn't we have a trial in a season of Deep Space Nine where Dax was on trial and she was not accountable for the actions of her past self?
Right.
Then now we're in this episode and she's justifying the Sisko. Am I bound by Klingon law or Federation law? And she decides she's bound by Klingon law. She's picking and choosing when the Dax is responsible and when it's not.
Right.
I'm hating on Jadzia this episode. I didn't think I'd be hating on Jadzia, but I am.
Well, there's a lot to discuss with the struggle the struggle that she's going through.
Right, deciding, being tugged in different directions.
And how many
right?
bad decisions did you make as a 20 something year old?
None.
I made a lot.
I didn't make a single one.
Oh, I made perfect decisions all through my
life. I want to say I've lived a perfect life.
Okay, good. Good to know. But I made a lot of mistakes.
I made a lot of dumb mistakes. Yes. Yes.
And this could be just her not knowing
growing
how to
as
deal
a,
with it.
Growing as a person, as a symbiote.
Absolutely.
Very true. But then also, how does Sisko, as a commander, let her come back? To me, that is... Well, this is kind of the character of Sisko, though, too. He has a lot of gray area in him.
And he's very loyal to his friends.
And he's very loyal. But as a Federation officer, when you are writing your log in your diary, because they have to write in their diaries all the time.
Right.
Sure, he didn't put it in there.
Someone did, though. Kira knew. Everyone knew. Everyone knew in the station what she was doing. Someone is going to rat on her. Someone. It doesn't even have to be one of the main bridge crew. It could be Joe Schmo on the lower decks.
Hey, where are you going with that runabout?
Hey, OMG, what are you doing with those three Klingons in that Batleth? Nothing.
Okay.
So, to me, there's no way she'd be able to step foot on the bridge after she went with the intent of killing someone. She was an accessory to murder. Yes. For the Klingon law, she obeyed Klingon law. For Federation law, she's an accessory to murder.
I don't think Sisko would have done it for anybody else. If it was somebody...
For Kira?
No.
Also, she's...
I don't know.
Because of his friendship?
Yeah. Because of the...
She does work for the Bajoran government, but she's there... He could have gone to Bajor and said, I need a new liaison.
Right.
I'm not working with her anymore.
Right.
I don't think he would for her. I don't think he would for any of this... But I think you bring up a very good point. That friendship with Curzon blinds him to his morality, right? Which is so funny because in the first couple episodes, his morality, he's on the high horse with Picard on these things, right? And I think this is a growth of Sisko and maybe a detriment to his character. And I think this is actually a detriment to his character. He's violating everything the Federation stands for by being loyal to his friend.
Well, you think about, I think we could, especially when we were younger, we all have inconsistencies in the way we've chosen things in our
absolutely
past too. So this could be just one of those things that, like you said, a blind side, that weak indication as towards Curzon or the Dax symbiont or Jadzia, and they're trying to do what you do, and I'm just going to ignore this one and feel bad about
See,
it. But okay. He gives her a stink eye when she gets back.
He does, but I have a feeling by the next episode things will be back to normal.
Of course.
Yeah, which is an inconsistency. But okay, think about it this way. I am a pastor at a church. I'm really good friends with one of the other members of staff. I find out that member of staff has been stealing money from the church, totally against the church. But they're my good friend, so I keep my mouth shut. I've hurt all the other people in that church by keeping my mouth shut because their money's now gone. And Sisko has hurt the Federation because now a high-ranking member of his staff, of his crew, is an accessory to murder. Where is your ability to say, we expect better now as Sisko? Where would my ability to say, I expect better from my congregation, right? If I find out another person steals money and be like, we don't do that here. And they go, well, wait, this person did. You have no right to tell me what I can and cannot do.
Well, as a minister, you kind of have a rule book right in front of you.
Right.
Federation has a rule book.
So,
I mean, but it's not dictated by God.
Exactly. I don't even believe in God in the Federation.
So what Jadzia does it directly affect anybody else in the Federation or on DS9?
I think it will affect. I
does
do.
It directly negatively impact?
I do, because I think it tells Bashir and O'Brien that if they have someone that they feel the murder is justified, they can do it.
Let's go back to the Star Trek golden rule, the needs of the many or the needs of the few.
Was it really necessary that this albino died? Is it really going to change the world?
I'm just having fun with it.
See, I know. I didn't realize I was so passionate about this until we got into this episode.
But in your comparison, like if the stealing of money or that directly impacts everybody else in the congregation, right?
The good of the church.
Yeah,
so,
it does.
So does the Federation suffer for what Jadzia does?
Because clearly this albino is an outcast from the Klingon society.
He's
as
an
well.
Outcast. I do think if that became wider known news, the commander of a vital space station allowed his... She's really not the XO. She's third in command.
Third, yeah.
Probably. Let this third highest power officer get away with murder and just brushed his eye at it and... people found out about that, that would be a big issue. That'd be a huge scandal for the Federation.
She asked for a leave of absence.
He knew what she was doing.
Does everybody know he know?
He knows.
Does everybody know that?
So then that's what's in the law.
But that's another moral, that's another issue. You've compromised your ideals. So, okay.
So then that's,
I've already
but
lied
that's
about,
within the log. That's what you say, right?
Yeah.
Jadzia asked for a leave of absence. Absence granted. What she does on her own time. During her leave of absence.
Her absence wasn't granted. He said no.
No, he didn't. That was left open. If you read that conversation, that's why I had this.
Yeah, I got my notes.
And they go through the whole conversation. She said, do you really think you'll be capable of doing this? Dax, I don't know. There's only one way to find out, isn't there? Let's say you are. Let's say you survive this insanity. You expect to come back here and resume your duties as though nothing's happened. Dax, I guess that'll be up to you. And that was the end of it. There was no denied. Right. There was no approval. We're assuming that she got approval because she was able to go.
So are we led to believe that Sisko doesn't know that the albino is dead when she gets back, though?
Oh, he gave her the stink eye. He knows. But
I think
the question is, does he know who did it? Does she know, you know how involved he was in the process?
She went to go kill it. It doesn't matter if she did it. She was there when
she's an accomplice. That's what
she's an accomplice, right?
But Sisko can cover his ass for the Federation, morally, I guess, if he wants. But
He can cover himself, yes, on paper, but he's compromised the ideals of the Federation in his actions.
Oh, that won't be the last time.
Oh, well, I know. And spoiler. I think that's what makes, I mean, it sounds like I'm really hating on this because I'm angry about this. No, I love the fact that this happened. I think this is a great story point. I think this is an issue a lot of us would probably struggle with, right?
Oh, yeah.
If you had a symbiote, if you were, you know, Rob Dax, and you told me you had to go kill someone, I'd be like, dude, that's not cool. And you still go and do it. Like,
and then we're podcasting on Saturday. What's up? What'd you do this weekend? Not important.
Not important. I went and killed a couple of albinos. My sister was an albino, just for the record.
Really?
Yeah, my middle sister.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Pure white hair, yeah.
I didn't know that either.
It's crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. What were we talking about?
I don't know.
Killing albinos, that's right.
Killing albinos. Yeah, I just think, to me, this is one of the first times with Sisko where I absolutely and totally disagree with how he handled the situation. For the most part, I've been on his side. This time,
yeah, I would say up to this point, he has made some good decisions. He's been pretty level-headed up to this point. And this strayed from consistency.
Well, and he's called people on their behavior and got them to change their behavior, right? He's done it with Kira, and he's helped O'Brien overcome some of his issues. Not totally with the Cardassians, but he's helping him with it. And here he is with Dax, and he can't change her mind because the stubbornness of the Curzon part coming out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I don't really know where I'm going beyond
saying...
And
the youth of Jadzia, too. So you got Curzon's blood oath, you got Jadzia's youth.
Yeah.
Which, we're all stubborn when we're 20.
So who's at fault? Who takes the blame here? Obviously, we know Jadzia does. She goes and does the act.
Right.
But Sisko's the commander. He could have said, if you walk off the station right now, you are done here. You're done. You're never coming back. Would that have changed Jadzia? Probably not. She probably would have still gone. But the ideals of the Federation would have been intact, and Sisko's moral compass would have been intact. Because now, Sisko, in a way, is an accomplice to murder. If Joe said, I'm going to go kill someone tomorrow, and I say, don't do it, Joe, and Joe goes and does it anyways, and the cops come up to me and say, Nick, did you know anything about this? Yeah. Well, why didn't you call us to tell us before he did it? I just didn't want to. Like, now I'm part of it. Like, I'm an accomplice.
Also, we probably wouldn't take Joe seriously.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
I'm just so loving. I can't kill anybody.
So,
I know you like Garrick a lot, and there's a lot of gray area there.
So, I guess what I'm getting at, which I had no clue that I was there at the beginning of this episode, Sisko's now an accomplice to murder.
You take it a long path to get there, but yeah. I see your point, but it's a long path.
It's a long path.
It's a leap.
But he could have stopped her.
Could have tried to stop her harder.
He could have tried to stop her harder. Yes. Okay. He probably couldn't have stopped her.
No.
She would have done it.
Nope.
He could have let her go, but kept his ideals and the Federation's ideals intact. But he didn't.
But he doesn't know that she did it.
Doesn't matter. He knows that the albino was killed, and she was there when the albino was killed. She was part of it.
Maybe he just thinks that the albino's death is inevitable.
It's very possible, but for instance...
Because with or without Dax, they're gonna kill him.
Just because someone's death is inevitable... And, like, let's say we know someone or we know their death is inevitable. Does that
That's
mean
all of us,
I'm
by
going
the way. Spoiler alert.
Does that mean I'm going to encourage either of you to go do it?
Death is
undefeated. If you two go and say, you know what, someone's going to kill him anyways, it might as well be me. I'd be like, no, don't let it be you. You don't want this. And if you do this, we're done, man. I'm washing my hands of you. You're going to go kill someone because they deserve to be killed? I'm done. Sisko doesn't do that. He's just like, I don't know if I can get along with you anymore. And then she comes back and he's like, but the next episode he's like, what's up, my friend?
What's up, girl?
How you doing? How's it feel 2 days post-kill?
God.
I have very strong feelings about this. I had no idea it existed.
So does Sisko have any sort of animosity with the Klingons?
No. He's good.
All right.
Yeah. Former Borg captains, yes.
Yeah, exactly. The Borg, a little bitter.
I mean, I see where you're going and where you're coming from with this. You just
don't support it.
No, I think I support it a little bit. Maybe not. You just not
don't
as strong.
Think he has the blood on his hands.
I think. I mean,
a little bit dirty, but they're not soaked. Yeah,
right. I think he,
paper cut.
You know, I think he has justified it or covered his, ouch, you know, covered his decisions the best way he can in the eyes of the Federation.
Yeah.
Morally, I think he's a bit, you know, compromised in this decision. Yeah. Not of a
that was Rob that was nodding Rob's his head. He comes silent up to the mic, looks at it, and nods his head.
Yeah.
You can maybe hear the air wish.
Well, translates well over a podcast.
I'll go back to recording us.
I'll add like a whoosh sound for when you nodded your head.
Speaking of which, did you hear the old Enterprise doors whoosh when they opened the holosuite at the beginning?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, buddy.
I was like, I know that sound. I know that sound.
Yeah, buddy. So, hey, I was at Barnes & Noble's the other day.
Did you know?
Did you know the Enterprise has a history in Michigan? There's a book on the history of Michigan, and there was something about the Enterprise, the original Enterprise. I looked at it. I didn't pick it up and buy it.
I
almost bought
Star
it for
Trek
you,
Enterprise,
but I don't
naval?
Know if you're a big reader, so I didn't know.
I read, yeah. Is it the naval ship or is it the
no,
Star Trek ship?
The Star Trek ship.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Some sort of history. I don't know what it was, but it's Michigan history, and it had the it was a magazine at Barnes & Noble's. It was a Michigan history magazine, and it had the Enterprise on the cover of it, talking about the history
so
of it.
So one exchange, Nick's looking that up, I enjoyed here is when Odo's in his office, and he's chilling out there. He kind of looks around like he's being spooked by something. And Odo goes, how'd you get in here? Koloth says, I'm Koloth. Odo says, that doesn't answer my question. Koloth, yes, it does. It was very Batman-y to me. Yeah. I was like,
it did.
I got a good laugh out of that one.
It did. Yeah. Yeah.
Thoroughly enjoyed that quote.
Yeah.
Anything else or shall we rate? We're at an hour and 16. Should probably rate.
Let's rate.
Let's rate.
Remember when our goal was to get our episodes 45 minutes?
Yeah, that didn't happen
it's
once.
It's not possible.
No.
I think people know we've got a formula. The first 25 minutes, we talk shop.
And there's a hard line of where that started, and I don't know if you guys noticed this, but it was...
No, we ran long before your presence.
I don't think you ran over an hour.
No, we did not.
You were under an hour every episode.
Before, there were two voices. Now right. There's a third. Naturally, it's going to be longer.
Naturally.
25 minutes a person.
Yeah.
For showtime. Oh, gosh, I feel like I talk a lot, though.
I think it's more 40 minutes for Nick and like
I know. It's
15 40, for Rob
it's
and I.
It's 40 minutes of Nick ranting, cutting you two off, telling
you
you're wrong.
I just brooded quietly.
Oh, gosh. Let's rate.
All
let's
right.
go. All right.
You two, I
so,
really love these episodes.
Profit and loss, I'm going to give a 7.5.
7.5. Wow. Nice.
I mean, 7 of that is Garrick, and the rest of it is...
So does Garrick automatically equal a 7?
Garrick is...
If Garrick's in the... I mean, Bashir mentioned Garrick last week, and I was like, this is a great episode.
Really, Garrick made the episode a 10, but everyone else was
a
5,
they
so
they
it averaged
it
out to a 7.5.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 7.5 as well. I thought it was a really good episode, but I think part of the reason why I'm giving this a 7.5 is because the next episode's getting a higher ranking from me.
Really?
Because of our conversation alone.
I gave it a 7.
A 7?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I really like the politics stuff.
I do too.
On the show. It's really good.
Yeah. When we talk about In the Hands of the Prophet from the first season, I love when they deep dived into that. Mm-hmm. Oh, it made me so happy.
Yeah. I do too.
Yep. Yeah. All right. So we got Blood Oath.
8.5.
Wow.
Shoot the moon.
Maybe it was our conversation based off of it. It left a lot of questions for me and really.
Your highest rating since Paradise.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Because when I watched this episode, it did not feel like an 8.5 to me. It felt like a 7. But
this episode is loved by a lot of people, by the
way. Okay. All right. Cool.
7 is where I'm at.
Yeah, I'd say 7.
And
that's because you're both okay with murder.
Maybe.
Whoa.
That's the reach I'm going to take with this one. I'm going out there.
So I think it would be, if I had a bit more familiarity with Klingons, I think it would be higher because I really enjoyed the episode and it made me want to learn more about Klingon history and in general.
Yeah.
So it was a good episode. I'll go 7.
Okay. Did you rank?
Yeah, I did 7 as well.
7. So yep. These were two solid episodes. I mean, we all of us like these episodes.
Yep.
And it's been a while since I think we've all agreed we've all liked the episode.
No, we were cool with Paradise. We were pretty much spot on with that one.
Yeah.
The cult one.
The cult one. I mean, we fought about it.
Oh, yeah, we fought about it, but we all liked it for different reasons, I think.
Yeah. And some of us were wrong. Some of
some
us.
Of you, some of us love right. cults. You guys guess who that is.
The inconsistencies with your decision.
I very much am inconsistent. I fully acknowledge
because
it.
Because cults tend to lead to deaths.
Or sacrifices in some way. Right. Yeah.
Oh, this has been
yeah,
fun.
You're vehemently...
You're the Ben Sisko of the group
anti-murder
here.
Anti-murder this episode.
Maybe I am. Yeah. Maybe I'm the moral gray area guy. Who would have thought? Anyways.
Good. These are good episodes, though.
They were good episodes because they gave us something to talk about.
That's true. That's true.
Next I don't know if you realize this or not, but we talk about the episodes regardless every week.
Sometimes take over an hour.
There have been times where we've glossed over the episodes, though. Like
yeah, we're just,
10
we're
minutes
talk,
and
we're
done.
We're talking other stuff beginning and end. We're like, hey, we watched two episodes of Deep Space Nine.
We give them a 6 and a 4. And anyways, how about those lions?
Yes. Let's talk about how bad Bashir was.
Yeah, exactly. Next week we get Marquee 1 and 2.
Yeah. Which is setting up Voyager.
Viger.
Now, you gave me a generation episode to watch as a contextual piece?
Probably after those, because I think the Maquis is the first mention of the Maquis, these first two episodes. So you get a little more backstory about the Maquis with that episode I gave you.
So is it good to watch all three to bring to the discussion?
Yeah, you could. I haven't watched the other one in a while.
I'm talking about for me.
Yeah,
you guys have probably already seen
it. It'll give you a lot of...
Maybe, but
it's been a while. I might just rewatch it just for
kids. It'll give you some knowledge, more information on the Maquis because they come into play here quite a bit for a season or so.
Okay.
Is it Maquis or Maquis?
Maquis.
It's Maquis.
No.
No. Okay.
Disagree.
It's spelled
M-A-Q-U... Let's discuss it.
I-S, right? Or I-U-S.
M-A-R-Q-U-I-S.
Oh, yeah. It's Mar... Yeah. Yeah. Kind of like... There was an old school... Marquee was used for back in the colonial area.
Yep.
He was also in the Funky Bunch.
Yeah.
Well played. All right.
Marquee.
Music to cue us out. I think that's a solid exit point. Marquee Mark in the...
On that low note, let's go.
Where I wish I could sample music because Marquee Mark would be playing here. Oh, feel the vibration.
Oh, man, that'd be
you
great.
You could just sing it.
Good vibration. It's such a...
You guys can turn this off anytime.
All right.
If you've lasted this long, you're rewarded with Nick singing Marquee Mark in the Funky Bunch.
You're welcome.
Bye, everyone. Bye.